Good evening. I want to welcome everyone back tonight, especially those who heard that I would be speaking and love God enough to come back anyway. I want to thank you. We want to continue to keep Nathan in prayer. In fact, when I got a call and asked if I could speak tonight, I tried reaching out to him and, you know, possibly get some tips, and I was hoping to get one of those bright ties from him too, but I couldn't reach him, so maybe next time. Again, I want to say happy Mother's Day to all the mothers and those who represent motherhood. As Ken mentioned this morning, and I agree with him, it's good to have, I don't have my mother in the house tonight, but I do have my mother-in-law. She's here, and it's wonderful when you can get along with your in-laws. You know, some call them outlaws, but, you know, they're your in-laws, and I'm thankful that you're with us tonight. We get along very well, especially when she makes her pecan pie. Yes, that is a hint. but I do want to say happy Mother's Day to all the ladies this evening. If you turn with me over to Acts chapter 16, this is our lesson text. Began at the 23rd verse, it reads, "When they laid many stripes upon them," talking about Paul, "and cast them into prison, charging the jailer to keep them safely, who having received such a charge, thrust them into the inner prison and made their feet fast in the stocks. And at midnight, Paul and Silas prayed and sang praise unto God, and the prisoners heard them. And suddenly there was a great earthquake, so that the foundation of the prison were shaken. And immediately all the doors were open and everyone's bands were loosed. And the keeper of the prison, awakened out of his sleep and seeing the prison doors open, drew out his sword and would have killed himself, supposing that the prisoners had been fled. But Paul cried with a loud voice, saying, 'Do thyself no harm, for we are all here.' Then he called for a light and sprang in and came trembling and fell down before Paul and Silas and brought them out and said, 'Sirs, what must I do to be saved?' And they said, 'Believe on the Lord Jesus Christ, and thou shalt be saved and thy house.' Verse 32, 'And they spake unto him the word of the Lord and to all that were in his house. And he took them the same hour of the night and washed their stripes and was baptized, he and all his, straightway. And when he had brought them into his house, he set meat before them and rejoiced, believing in God with all his house. Verse 35, when it was day, the magistrate sent the surgeon, saying, 'Let those men go.'" Some of you may have noticed that I have both my tablet here and some paper. That did not mean I ran out of memory on my tablet, so this is not going to be a long lesson, but I do want to have both with me. In Acts chapter 16, we may not go too much into the actual text here, but when I read it, I was reminded of an article I read a couple of years ago. Many of you are probably familiar with the Chilean miners who were trapped in the mines for several weeks. There was an international coverage of the story, and they spoke about to the miners' families, the current and former miners. They spoke to doctors, they spoke to architects, they spoke to psychologists, anyone they could talk to get a new angle on the story. But there was one article that particularly struck me because it compared the experience of the miners not to some of the things you might expect, but to the soldiers on the battlefield. See, prior to this article and really coming out, other areas had been used to compare these miners, from astronauts who are out in space for a long period of time to submariners, also even polar researchers who experienced isolation for a prolonged period of time. But the difference in this article they wrote was that just like soldiers, these miners didn't know when their time was going to come to an end down there. See, when you're out in space, you can abort the mission and return home. When you're underseas, something can happen and you can abort the mission and go home. But these miners had no idea when or if they would ever make it out. And I start thinking about that, and I continued to read it because I thought that was really interesting, and they start talking about some of the psychological effects that this event had on the miners. Now, obviously, there was a higher level of stress that was brought on because of it. And for the miners, their biggest stress was their families. For most of these generally poor miners, they were the primary breadwinners in the house. And so them being trapped, they couldn't do anything to help their family. And that raised their level of stress, but it also did something else. It also gave them a sense of hopelessness and helplessness. You know, there are a lot of things in life that we know we can't control. And often we say to one another, you know, you really can't control it, so, you know, don't worry about it. Well, that's easier said than done when you're dealing with family. I have my mother. She's 83 years old. She suffers from a number of health issues. And she's in Seattle, Washington, 3,000 miles away. And when I get a call saying that she's not feeling well or she's in the hospital, I can't do anything about it. I want to be there. I'm not a doctor. I can't really help her, but just my mere presence. But I can't do anything about it. So it's very hard to say, well, since you can't do anything about it, you don't need to worry about it. I worry. It's a real thing. Now imagine that feeling multiplied by 100 when you deal with these miners who are trapped inside of a well. I mean, trapped inside of a mine, and they can't do anything to help their family. Their sense of hopelessness and helplessness goes up. In addition, one of the effects it had on them is the loss of daily rhythm. What I mean by that is when you can't tell day from night, it becomes very difficult for your body to control and do the things it normally would. And as a result, you lose a lot of sleep. You can suffer from depression, fatigue, and also one of the other things that leads to is irritability. When you're down there that long, you can't tell day from night, you're not getting a lot of sleep, you start to get a little irritated. Now, wives, I'm talking to the wives for a second. Imagine your irritability when you're trying to sleep and your husband is snoring, okay? Or, you know, for our young ones, we have a sleepover and you have your best friend over there and that person falls asleep before you do and they just start snoring. Now, you love them, so strangling them is off the table. But you can be a little irritated, right? Now, again, multiply that by 100. The smallest things really start to get to them, okay? In addition, mistrust starts to set in. Now, this could happen within the group or even to those trying to help them. Any attempt not to be completely forthcoming with information. You know, they're waiting to hear from the surface what's going on. And if they don't hear things in a timely fashion, it was easy for them to kind of bond together against those who were even trying to help them. So all these things are going on in their minds. And I start thinking about it as I was reading the article, and I said, you know, that has a lot to do with when we find ourselves in spiritually dark places. When we find ourselves weighed down by sin, all the iniquity around us, there's a level of stress that can develop. Wouldn't you agree? You know, and Satan, of course, when that goes up, he's going to try to make it seem like it's hopeless. You're stuck in it. He doesn't want you to think there's any way out of it. Our daily life can be disrupted. You know, just like these miners, we can lose sleep. If you've been in one of those spiritually dark places, you can lose some sleep over it. You get depressed, you get fatigued, you become easily irritated, even with the people trying to help you. I don't need that right now. You know, you're coming around talking the Bible, and right now I just can't accept that. They're trying to help you, and we get irritated. And of course, that level of distrust can also develop. So for a few moments, what I want to do is just talk about what gets us into these dark places, but more importantly, what gets us out of them. Okay. Now, first, what puts us in these dark places? Well, the first thing is we do. Self-inflicted. You know, we make bad choices or follow fleshly desires rather than the path of God laid out for us. You know, or we may even have good intentions, but we have bad information. And that can lead to some bad results. 2 Samuel chapter 7, 12 through 17. Now, I know that we make some bad choices, and a lot of times those choices, we plan ahead. Now, I'm not asking for anybody to raise their hand, but How many times has sin actually snuck up on us? Not often. Not often. A lot of times, the sins that we commit, we almost plan for them. There may be somebody right now who had a bad day at the office on Friday, and they can't wait to get into the office on Monday to tell their boss a thing or two. In other words, sometimes we plan ahead for some of the things that we do. Oftentimes, not only are they self-inflicted, but they can be brought on by others. You know, we have others in our lives who are going through their own dark times, and like crabs in a barrel, they try to pull us down with them. You know, others may not want us to succeed, or they may feel threatened, you know, by our success, our position, outward appearance, whatever that is. You know, so they sabotage the work. Nehemiah chapter 2, we see Sanballat and Tobias trying to sabotage the work being done. But we know we have to keep on and persevere. Not only do we find ourselves in dark places because of things that we do, or maybe someone else pulling us into their own, but sometimes God has to allow. He allows us to be put in situations so we can examine where we are. You know, the children of Israel, when they left Egypt, they were not far from the promised land. But because of some of the things they did, because of their lack of faith, God allowed them to roam in the wilderness for 40 years. They could have gone basically across the street and been where they needed to go. But God had to allow some things to take place so that they can be restored and understand where they should be. But you know, regardless of the reason, whether it's self-inflicted, whether it's brought on by others or something that God allows, we have to have the trust and faith that it can and will work out for our good. Romans 8:28 talks about that. So with that said, turn over to Acts chapter 12. Acts chapter 12. You're going to look at verses 1 and 2. Or 1 through 12, sorry. Acts chapter 12. This is the time of Herod the king. It says, now at the time Herod the king stretched forth his hand to vex certain of the church, and he killed James, the brother of John, with a sword. And because it pleased the Jews, he proceeded further to take Peter also. Then were the days of unleavened bread. And when he had apprehended him, he put him in prison and delivered him to four quaternions of soldiers to keep him, intending after Easter to bring him forth to the people. So he had plans for Peter. Verse 5, Peter therefore was kept in prison, but prayer was made without ceasing of the church unto God for him. Now when Herod, who had brought him forth, the same night Peter was sleeping between two soldiers, bound with two chains, and the keeper before the door kept the prison. And behold, the angel of the Lord came upon him, and the light shined in the prison, and he smote Peter on the side and raised him up, saying, arise up quickly. And his chains fell off his hands. And the angel said unto him, gird thyself and bind on thy sandals. And so he did. And he saith unto him, cast thy garments about thee and follow me. Verse 9, he went out and followed him, and wist not that it was true which was done by the angel, but thought he saw a vision. And when they were past the first and second ward, they came into the iron gate that leads unto the city, which opened to them of his own accord, and they went out and passed on through one street, and forthwith the angel departed from them. Now, before we read verse 11, I want you to think about the times when we've been delivered. We've probably all had some times where we recognized we were not in the place where we wanted to be spiritually, but God got us through. And verse 11 is the key. And when Peter was come to himself, when he really thought about it, when he really looked back on what was going on, he said, now I know of a surety that the Lord has sent his angels and hath delivered me out of the hands of Herod and from all the expectations of the people of the Jews. And when he had considered the thing, he came to the house of Mary, the mother of John, whose surname was Mark, where many were gathered together praying. You know, it's very important that we remember that when we get out of these dark places, who got us out? Because a lot of times we want to sit up and say, you know, I was there, but I decided to just buckle up and I knew what I had to do and I got myself out of it. And if we make that mistake, we're going to find ourselves back in that same situation again. You don't believe me? I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, but how many of us have ever said these words? Lord, if you get me out of this one, I'll never do it again. And then we find ourselves back in the same situation again. Now, you know, I didn't mean to just all, you know, look directly at all of our young ones, because we know we've probably made that statement more than you have. But I think we all can understand and remember one time saying, if you just get me out of it this one time, I'll never do it again. We have to rely on God, not our own strength. Proverbs 3 and 5, which our youth should know very well, as we're going to have that for our last leaders next year. We shouldn't lean on our own strength, but fully rely on God. But you know, dark places, they come in our lives, but they can also bring about some good results if we have the right focus. As I was reading the article, one of the things that they mentioned was that leadership was quickly recognized among the miners. You know, psychologists said that during these trials, rank and hierarchy often went out the window, and the most competent people were looked to for their leadership. You know, as Christians, I think, you know, we must be in that position to lead when the trials are present. We should not wait until the trials start before we even act like leaders. Now, I wasn't here at the Cary Church when our elders here were put into place, but I have to believe that all of them demonstrated some level, some competency, some leadership abilities prior to being put in that role. We have to have that leadership. We have to have the leadership qualities before we have that leadership title. Is it morning already? I didn't think I was going that long. Sorry. You know, Peter, with all of his faults, he often stepped into the leadership role among the apostles. You know, one time they're out in the boat. They see something strange out in the water, storming out, and they were scared. And Jesus said, it's all right. It's just me. Peter was the one among all the apostles who said, Lord, if it's you, let me come out. Jesus said, come on. Now, I don't know how many of you would do it. In the storm, with the wind blowing, he steps out of the boat, expecting to land on something solid. He's not on the shore, folks. He's out in the water. He's expecting to land on something solid. That shows a lot of leadership right there. Because the other 11 were like, okay, you do that on your own, Peter. No one else was recorded in the Bible was jumping out there with Peter. But he did it anyway. And for a while, he walked on water. You know, later on, he was the one who was protecting Christ when they came to take him. You know, his mind may not have exactly been where it needed to be, but you know what? He says, not over my dead body. He was the one who was protecting him. There were other apostles there, but it was Peter who jumped forward. You know, and even after he abandoned him, say, well, you know, he denied Christ 3 times. Yes, he did. He denied him. You know, and he fled for a while, but he was also the first one, and they said when the apostles were speaking on the day of Pentecost, he said he stood among the 12, and he preached that gospel sermon. So we know Peter had some leadership traits about him. We need to show those same leadership traits in our everyday lives. And oftentimes it comes just from being in those dark places. You know, also the dark place can bring about a level of determination. I mentioned to you Nehemiah chapter 2 earlier. You know, in the midst of trials, we can have a renewed sense of determination. We accept the trials. We know that they're there. But it should not deter us from our goals. Now, I just want to stop here for a second, because a lot of times we see a trial, and if we're not careful, we try to read God. We try to figure out what God is thinking. We say, well, you know, if all this is happening, maybe that means God does not, you know, he doesn't want me to go down this path. Well, we don't know that. Maybe God is allowing these trials to come our way to strengthen us, to build us up. You know, we have to be very careful trying to read signs. You know, Matthew chapter 16, 1 through 3 talks about that. You know, Jesus was talking to them, and they were saying how, well, you know, if the sky is red, must be, we're going to have some good weather. And another group said, well, the sky is red, must be have bad weather. You know, but we don't understand, we don't fully grasp everything of God. We know this because we read Isaiah chapter 55, 8 and 9. My thoughts are not your thoughts. Neither my ways your ways. So we understand that God has a way that we may not fully understand. But our goal is not to try to read the signs, but remain faithful and be determined to do his will. Finally, those dark places, you know, it brings about leadership. It can bring about determination. But finally, it can bring about faithfulness. You know, when things close in around us, our focus needs to be upward, not outward. God showed us that if we have a focus on him, the trials, they may still hurt us, but they can't destroy us. You know, one of my favorite stories or favorite accounts, you know, I hate using story when referring to Bible accounts. It kind of takes away from the reality of what actually did occur. You know, these were people in the Old Testament and New Testament who were going about living their lives. They were not there just to be part of a book, or, you know, God didn't go up to Moses one day and say, you know, Moses, you do this, and one day we're going to have a movie about you on every Easter. We're going to show it on ABC, and Charlton Heston is going to play you, right? They were going about living their lives, and God used them in a way and then gave an account of the deeds. But one of my favorite accounts comes from Numbers chapter 21. Numbers 21, 4 through 8. And again, like always, like oftentimes had occurred, the children of Israel were complaining. And finally God said, all right, you want to complain? How about I send a few serpents your way? And the serpents, the Bible records, serpents bit many of the children of Israel and many of them died. And that's when they said, my bad, my mistake. Moses, please call God and ask him to remove these serpents. And Moses went to God, but you know what? God didn't remove the serpents. He said, I want you to make a serpent of brass and hold it up. And whoever looks upon the serpent of brass, when they're bit, they won't die. And the reason why I like that so much, because we can all identify with it. The serpents never went away. They were still being bitten. But they didn't die. And that lets me know that when I'm facing trials, I may go to God and say, God, can you remove this trial? He may not remove it. He says, I want you to change your focus. We're not going to remove the serpent. We're not going to remove that trial. I want you to change your focus and look upward, not outward. So when the trial comes, it may still sting. It may still hurt. But it will not destroy you because your focus has changed. And if we have our focus changed upward toward God, not outward toward the problems, we're going to find that no trial can destroy us. Matthew chapter 7 as we close. Matthew chapter 7. Matthew chapter 7, let's look at verse 24. If it's not there, it's somewhere else. 24 through 27, it reads, therefore, whosoever heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them, I will liken him unto a wise man, which built his house upon a rock. And the rain descended, the flood came, and the winds blew, and beat upon that house, and it fell not, for it was founded upon a rock. And everyone that heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them not, shall be likened unto a foolish man which built his house upon the sand. And the rain descended, and the flood came, and the winds blew and beat upon the house, and it fell, and great was the fall of it. We're all going to have the rain descend on us. We're all going to have these dark times. We're all going to find ourselves in dark places. But when we do, it's going to be our foundation that's going to determine what's going to happen to us. Do we have our foundation built upon the rock? Or do we have our foundation built upon the sand? You know, we often hear that phrase, when the going gets tough, the tough gets going. very true. The author, Stephen Covey, he wrote the book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. He wrote this phrase. It's something that has stayed with me. He says, begin with the end in mind. We gain confidence by pulling from our experience and our experience from others to get through the things that we face. Things that are happening today may seem unprecedented. But God has shown us, he's already shown us, through his word, there's nothing new under the sun. What we face today has been faced before. The solution to today's problems have already been given. You know, when we begin with the end in mind, when we begin our journey, knowing already what the end is, you know, I enjoy watching some boxing matches, and you know, there's always that thought in the back of some people say, is this fixed? Well, this fight is fixed. We already know what the end is going to be. You know, none of us are gamblers. We're not going to say we're going to bet on it. But we understand that the fight is already fixed. All we need to do is be on the winning side. You know, and I was a big fan of, you see, I like sports. I was a big fan of Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls. And I remember recording Game 6 against Utah when they won the championship one year. And I remember going back later and watching that tape. And at one point, Utah was ahead, and it looked like they were going to pull it off, and they were going to force a Game 7. And they were up by 5 points at one point toward the end of the game. Do you think I was worried as a Chicago Bulls fan? You know why? The game had already been played. The outcome had already been decided. And we find out what happens. There was a steal and a missed shot, and somebody scores, and then Michael Jordan is this game winner, and everybody's screaming and yelling. But you know what? It was nothing new. The game had already been decided. When we understand what the end already is, it's going to help us in those dark places. It's going to hurt. Yes, it's going to sting. No, we're not going to like it. But when we begin with the end in mind, we know what the outcome is going to be. And that is victory through Christ. Malachi 3:6 talks about how God is the same yesterday, today, and forevermore. He changes not. So we already know that God has the victory. Now, perhaps you find yourself in that dark place wondering where you need to be, how you can get out of that. Well, if you haven't put on Christ, you have that opportunity to get out of that dark place, which is that life of sin. By committing to him, by hearing the gospel, believing it, repenting, turning away from you have been going and turning toward God, confessing and being baptized for the remission of your sin. Or perhaps you find yourself as a Christian in one of those dark places tonight, and you just need the prayers of the saints. If you find yourself in any of those categories, we want to give you that opportunity to come forward at this time as we together stand to sing the song of invitation.